Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
Rob Shriver is senior policy counsel at OPM.
The pathways are intended to create more clear, streamlined approaches. Internship programs, recent grads programs, and presidential management fellowship programs. Agencies should be actively recruiting from all segments of society. These programs would be a helpful way for them to bring entry-level talent into their organizations.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Away from your radio? Listen to Federal News Radio directly on your desktop. Click the red Listen Now button near the top of the federalnewsradio.com homepage.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Two security experts in the studio this morning, going to have a lot of fun talking about social networks and viruses and security from all kinds of different perspectives. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Terry Gouditis. She is the Cyber Intelligence Director at Civalence, and her colleague, Manoj Srivastava. He is the CTO at Civalence. Good morning, folks. How are you?
Good morning.
The first thing you can say is, how do you spell that funny word? Is that an S or a Y? Well, I'll spell it for you. It's CYVEILLANCE.com. You can get more information there on security. There's white papers there. There's a blog. There's all kinds of information, even a link to a YouTube video, which is a lot of fun, a five-minute video, and we'll talk about that more in the show. What I always do for my listeners, kind of set up the audience and just give them a preview of why in the world Terry's working here. I mean, you could be working at a million different places, Terry. Why are you working at Civalence and how'd you wind up here?
Sure, John. My background is actually I'm a forensic psychologist by trade and ended up in the security and intelligence field and specifically at Civalence. Because I think a lot of the security issues and intelligence gathering issues have to do with human behavior, whether it has to do with clicking on a link while you're reading your email or actually how those people behave behind the keyboard.
That's true. Manoj, what's your background, please?
I've been at Civalence for 6 years now, and I'm responsible for all the things technology and technical. Before that, I was at VeriSign, and I was running their DNS systems engineering group, which essentially is all about internet engineering, architecture, and security. So I've been involved with internet for, you know, since the early 90s, and have been, you know, focusing on the security aspects of how to keep things secure on the internet. So that's broadly speaking, you know, what I've been involved with for the past almost 20 years now.
If you look at trending news and trending topics, you listen to the radio, you Google News, and you can't help but noticing Google Plus. I mean, If you look at social networking and threats from social networking, people think of Twitter and Facebook. Well, Google Plus has reached 20 million people in just 24 days. It took 1,000 days for Facebook and Twitter to hit that. So Terry, I mean, from your perspective, I mean, people who are listening to the show, federal IT professionals, they have to keep an eye on what's going on in the social networking circles. You have to worry about Facebook. Now you have to worry about Google Plus. I mean, it's a difficult concept just to worry about all these social situations, isn't it?
It absolutely is. The social networking and social media arena is just exploding in terms of volume, whether it's individual users joining, people having to pay attention to what's being said out there. And I think from the security perspective, what organizations have to worry about, whether it's government or even commercial, is the level of self-disclosure and self-generated content that now appears on these various social networking sites.
You know, Manoj, I was reading the blog at your company website this morning. And they said, for people in their 20s, social media is like running water. They just expect it.
Right.
They expect that everyone's going to convey information through social media. From the perspective of a federal IT professional, what are some best practices for social media, for policies? I mean, what advice would you give one of my listeners if you sat down and had a coffee with them across the street?
Right. So I think the first thing to realize over here is that, you know, social media is not just a trend now. It's part of our culture. This is who we are. So as, you know, the kids are growing up, you know, we take these things for granted. We are connected all the time. Not being connected is not something that they are used to. So what that means is that when they are hitting the workforce, they expect the same experience that they have been used to. So the IT professionals, we have to embrace this concept. And, you know, we are doing pretty well in terms of embracing it. What that means is that people will be on the social media while they are at work. They'll be talking, they'll be discussing. And, you know, I mean, there are ways that they will be making that interaction in real time more productive for their employers and for their companies. But at the same time, there are risks associated with it, which we should be aware of and mitigate them in the right way. The risk, obviously, is the free flow of information. So if it benefits you, it also hurts you. So the idea is, like, you know, when you have such individuals or a workforce which is always connected, training them well, making sure that they're aware of the policies and the issues that you should be aware of, that they're not discussing what's confidential, what is not a public domain knowledge. So that education, I think, itself can go a long way. An employee wants to do the right thing. There are bad apples, but not everyone is bad, right? So just focusing on the bad apples and saying, okay, you will not have access to social media is essentially disempowering the workforce. So the first thing is we got to embrace it. The second thing is we have to deal with it appropriately to mitigate its negative effects.
You know, Terry, people look at me and they say, "You look like a computer geezer more than a computer guy, John. You've been around." I've been around a while, a long time. I used to write in the Washington Post about security and viruses, and I would, you know, on Tuesday I'd start writing my questions, and people would ask me about viruses, and I'd call up experts in the field like Dr. Peter Tippett, and then I'd print it on Sunday, and this is a 5-day lag here. Well, let me tell you something, antivirus and 4- and 5-day lags, you might as well just put your feet up on the table and just open the door and let the bad guys in, huh? They're just too much time delay in this whole antivirus thing, isn't there?
Absolutely. And in a couple of different realms, one is being educated or even understanding where those vulnerabilities are from zero-day attacks, the time frame that it takes some of the antivirus providers to actually provide those patches to the organizations that need to patch those holes, as well as just the security professional receiving the information. John, like you said, you know, you used to read the Washington Post once a week, and that's where you'd get your information. Well, now you can receive it in a far more real-time manner through Twitter and other social media sources.
No doubt about it. You know, Manoj, when I was in college, there was BYOB parties, bring your own booze. But now in federal agencies, it's BYOD, bring your own device.
Right.
People waltz in with Galaxies, with iPads, with five different operating systems and smartphones. I mean, it's difficult to just manage all of these mobile devices, but then the added challenge is many people are using mobile devices to access social networks, so it compounds the problem, doesn't it, Manoj?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it definitely is a trend, you know, the stuff that we are calling IT consumerization now. It has good aspects of it. You know, you have an employee, you have a workforce which is able to use the devices that they're more comfortable with and be more productive using those devices. And then in terms of cost savings and, you know, the management involved, there are positive aspects of that as well. But, you know, as anything else, it has its negative aspects. You know, there will be agencies and within the government which should not allow this ever, and they are probably on top of it. You know, if you are part of a defense organization or you are dealing with highly classified and top secret information, you do not want to go this route. On the other hand, you know, the bulk of agencies are civilian agencies where I think it makes a lot of sense. So if you embrace the concept, the next thing obviously is to figure out, okay, how do you manage it? How do you make it, you know, consistent with what you are trying to accomplish in terms of effectiveness and productivity? And, you know, I mean, the same thing is happening on the private sector side as well. So when people are using, you know, bringing their iPads and phones and working from their home, those things can be managed. And I think this thing sort of links directly into how cloud computing can help this particular trend. You know, the notion of virtual desktops. You might be sitting at your home PC, but if you have an image of your virtual desktop, then your information is still contained therein. Now, there are always ways of leaking information if you are intent on doing something malicious. But on the other hand, for 80% of the employees, of, you know, like 90%, whatever that percentage is, this is a very good thing for the agencies that they should leverage when it comes to iPhone. You know, again, being connected all the time, the information is flowing fast. And the speed of the information a lot of times results in a more effective organization. So what I see is over here is that the federal agencies should be gearing themselves to take full advantage of it and then mitigate the negative aspects of it.
Now, Terry, the organization Pew PEW did a study, and they said 56% of Internet users use social media. I would assume that 56% or more of federal employees use social media. They're a well-educated group, and that's what your company does. It assists in the whole idea of social engineering attacks.
That's correct. That's correct. I think, again, to sort of piggyback on what Manoj was talking about with these devices and the access to social media, whether you're using your own device, you're interacting with these platforms and there's a lot of information being exchanged. I think one thing that's important for the IT professional in the federal space and in the commercial space is that when you give the power to the people in their own devices, your normal perimeter controls, such as antivirus and IDS and firewalls, don't necessarily apply because you're going through a different network.
It's a way different strategy, and different concepts have to be used to combat the new social engineering attacks. We'll take a quick break. We come back, talk more about some mobile madness and talk about social engineering attacks and maybe about your YouTube video and how much fun it is. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Terry Gouditis, Cyber Intelligence Director, and Manoj Srivastava, and they're both with Cyvalence.
IBM's supercomputer Watson may make us feel inadequate on quiz shows, but our brains actually outperform even the most powerful computers in many respects. The human brain packs incredibly nimble learning and processing power into a relatively small space using tiny amounts of energy. Dwigu Kazum of Stanford University says today's digital computers will never really compare for a wide variety of tasks.
If we do brain simulation in real time using powerful supercomputers, it will basically require a dedicated nuclear power plant.
Kazum is part of a team engineering devices that mimic the versatile signaling strengths, learning ability, and size of the connections between nerve cells in the brain.
We try to extend the capabilities of information technology beyond digital logic.
The devices may also give us a better understanding of our brains. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Rick Holgate is the CIO of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. He says mobile computing will make data more accessible in the field.
Everything from, obviously, the video surveillance, but also office productivity, the ability to access our case management system, the ability to pull up reports and statistics, the ability to tap into other sorts of law enforcement databases, really giving them the entire portfolio of things that they normally need a much more heavy laptop to get to.
Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Dr. Terry Gouditis, Cyber Intelligence Director at Cyvalence, and her colleague, Manoj Srivastava, who is the CTO. We're talking about security and social engineering attacks and mobile devices. And you know, I think federal IT professionals are bombarded with this problem with mobile, but everyone's bombarded with the same problem at all. If you pick up Network World, they have a study here done by the IDC group, and it said that many IT administrators aren't aware of how many people use their own devices at work and how extensively they use these devices to access corporate information. Lots of people have security problems with mobile devices, don't they, Manoj?
No, that's absolutely right. You know, people are using their own devices, all kinds of devices, and it has issues. You know, the good or the bad news over here is that let's say even if people were not using their personal devices at work, and all they were doing was surfing the internet on the, you know, on the company issued PCs and laptops, they are still exposing the organization to the same risks as they would if they were using their own personal devices. So my point over here is that, you know, just by restricting personal devices, we are not making our enterprises any more secure. So if that is the case, then why not let people use it and then focus on what actually can be done to secure those devices, or even better, mitigate the risks that we get exposed to by being on the internet or being on, you know, removable media that can bring issues into the enterprise. So, for example, you know, if one of the most popular devices these days is iPhone, and mostly how people are interacting with the enterprise is by reading email. So the biggest exposure that you have, because people are using their iPhone to read email, is what happens if you lose the phone. So that line of thinking, you know, okay, if you lose the phone, what can I do to wipe the data out? Or what can I do to restrict my exposure? You know, allow only 25 emails that you can sync on a phone. So a clear action, device by device, can definitely help us make our organizations and our enterprises more secure. But the point is, there is something that can be done, and we should allow this to go forward and then take those actions based on the devices that we are talking about over here.
If you're listening to the show and wondering about more information on social engineering attacks, Manoj has a white paper available at the website, and it's kind of a funny spelling. It's CYVEILLANCE.com. It has white papers, has a very interesting blog with articles by both of my guests, curiously enough, in the last 60 days on all kinds of different topics involving social media and social media attacks. Now, Terry, one popular attack is a spear phishing attack. Perhaps you can maybe define that for our listeners and give us an example.
Sure. A spear phishing attack is basically a very targeted attack to either you, the specific individual, or perhaps your organization. And the spear phishing attacks come in typically looking like a very valid email. It may be from someone you think you know. It looks like a valid email address, but the warning is it might be spoofed. And it contains some type of malicious link or malicious malware attached to it. So again, they're going after you specifically, either because of the organization you belong to or because it's actually you. And spear phishing is based on social engineering. Those attackers want you to click on that email because they're making it attractive to you. They're sending you maybe, hey, take a look at this video link. It's interesting. Click here. Or I'd really like to have you attend this particular event. Please see the attached document for your agenda. Again, they're getting you to do something so that you end up with that malicious piece of code or malware on your machine or your phone.
So let's say I have a blog, and in my blog I say, I was at a security conference, I met Manoj, seemed like a pretty smart guy, has a good white paper. So an attacker could read my blog and then could craft an email to me and say, this is Manoj at Cyvalence.com, and say, well, here's the link to that white paper. And I'd say, yeah, I met Manoj, he's a good guy, I'm going to click on that link, spear phishing right there.
Absolutely.
It's specific information. So it's not send out 10,000 or 100,000 emails. It's, I got this guy. I mean, Manoj, I'm going to spoof his email address and send it out, and I'm going to hook that Gilroy. I'm going to nail him.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic example.
And I think that's what happens, too. I mean, you meet someone face-to-face, and you go, yeah, Manoj seems like a good guy. If he's going to send me something, he's a security guy. I mean, I could trust his email, right? Well, the bad guy, the spoofers, are going to say, God, they love your email address, because then everyone's going to be more of, oh, yeah, I trust him. Bang. So it is a matter of trust, isn't it, Manoj?
That's exactly right. You know, and that's a very one of the key bases of spear phishing attacks. The whole idea is to exploit the human emotion to trust in general, and then more so trust their friends and their families and the folks they know. And that's precisely what's going on. In the last 6 months, there have been very high profile breaches in the private sector as well as in the federal sector. And in most of these cases, the information that's available on social networks like LinkedIn, like Facebook, like Foursquare, it has been very cleverly used to craft these messages that have been sent to to extremely targeted people. So it's not about sending to anyone in the organization. You want to penetrate the enterprise, you pick a DBA, you pick a systems administrator, you pick somebody working in IT, and then you send them something which is of interest to them, whether it could be their academic interest, it could be their something they like to do as a hobby. And the human emotion is to trust these things when they see familiar names, when they see familiar context. And then the other thing is, if there is a link, most of us will click it to see, hey, okay, let's see what's out there. So using this human emotion to exploit and, get through into the enterprise is the thing that's going on right now. And unfortunately, this is not a problem of dumb people. This is a problem of human nature and human emotion. It goes to the very basic of who we are.
Look at Terry. So if I meet her at a breakfast club, she's got a lot of training. She's got a responsible position. So if I get an email from her, I'm going to say, well, logically, she should know about security. And, I've met her. I trust her. She seems like a trustworthy person. And, she's got a PhD. I mean, she's done this for years. Logic, emotion, authority. I'm going to get that email. And I'm going to click on it. And it's got nothing to do with network and penetration testing and IPv6 and we'll send out and do a pen test. Well, pen, you might as well, great idea, but that's got nothing to do with, I've already let her in, I click on that. And if I can click on the URL that she sends me, it may just sit on my network for 6 months and do nothing. Is that right, Terry?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. And, even if you didn't know me, and, trust aside, everyone's so busy in their current jobs. And again, it's a very fast-paced mobile world now. And so even if I get an email from someone, again, it appears interesting, it looks legitimate, just because I'm multitasking or I'm tired that day or fatigued or I'm on the phone and trying to write an email and receiving one, just out of the multitasking alone and curiosity, I may click that link.
If I'm sitting at my desktop computer and I've got a cup of coffee and it's a nice day and I'm thinking about the Redskins and I'm going to say, Terry, well, no, this is the wrong. This is a different Terry. This is surveillance with an S. But if Manoj is in his car, he's at a deadline, he's running late for an appointment, he gets out his smartphone, he gets an email, he goes, oh, he's going to be more vulnerable to click on it, isn't he?
No, that's absolutely right. That's exactly right. But one thing I do want to point out is that the various layers of security that have been put in the enterprise, they are necessary. We cannot do away with them. But security being security, it's a game of cat and mouse, right? We secure our networks, we secure our servers, we do all that stuff, and then the adversary finds a way to get in. And that's exactly what's going on. I mean, right now, it's a cliche, but human beings are the weakest link in this chain of security, and that link is being exploited. And the way I see that is, I don't think there's an end to it, right? I mean, today we have malicious links going on. We have seen attacks which had no links in there. All they were about establishing credibility and asking for information, and they were not a single attack. They were multi-step attacks. But at the end of the day, within five discrete actions, a highly secure organization was compromised. So I definitely think, we have reached a point where human beings are going to get exploited, and you know, I mean, we will be putting in more defenses, and those defenses will be needed. But this game of cat and mouse will continue.
It's like, well, of course you should drive a safe car and have good tires. Of course you wear a seatbelt, and now we'll teach you how to drive.
Exactly.
Right. Different skill sets completely, but of course we're going to recognize network protection. But yeah, you have to have understanding when to hit the brakes for a stoplight. Got to take a quick break. Come back, talk more about social media and security for federal IT folks. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Terry Gouditis, Cyber Intelligence Director, and her colleague, Manoj Srivastava. He's the CTO at Cyvalence.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Quality of care here and there. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. When comparing all hospitals in the United States and U.S. territories side by side, those in the United States have better quality of care. The data gathered from 2005 to 2008 compared 30-day death rates of Medicare patients admitted for heart attack, heart failure, or pneumonia. At Yale University, Dr. Marcella Nunez-Smith says that for every 100 patients admitted to a hospital,
there are two more patients who die from heart attacks in the U.S. territories, one more patient dies of heart failure, and three more patients die of pneumonia.
She suggests that more data specific to U.S. territories is needed. The study, supported by the HHS Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, was in the Archives of Internal Medicine. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Quest Government Services is becoming CenturyLink. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and financial strength, we are linking IT leaders to a better future. Your link to the future begins here. One company, stronger connected. See the benefits of partnering with us at quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Profile America, Tuesday, August 9th. It's hard to imagine modern life without escalators. Millions of people around the country use them every day in subways, airports, shopping centers, and office buildings. The first patent for a moving stairway was obtained on this date in 1859 by Nathan Ames. However, it was never built. The first practical escalator was built by Jesse Reno in 1896 at Coney Island, New York. Reno called his device an inclined elevator. The longest escalator in the Western Hemisphere is 230 feet long at the Wheaton, Maryland station of the Washington Metro. Making and installing escalators and elevators in the U.S. is a $2.6 billion a year business. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, two security experts. We have Dr. Terry Gouditis, Cyber Intelligence Director, and her colleague Manoj Srivastava. He's the CTO at a company called Cyvalence. For more information, you can go to Cyveillance.com. All kinds of blogs and white papers and a video. You know, if you Google your company over on YouTube, you find a little 5-minute video just from last month. Tell me about the video, Manoj, and why you guys decided to use it, and how does it communicate some of your concepts?
Right. So this video is of a new product that we launched earlier in June, and the product essentially is an appliance that's designed to catch spear phishing attacks against corporations.
We just talked about spear phishing. It's perfect, yeah.
Exactly. So we as a company have been in the business of monitoring the internet and extracting intelligence pertaining to security threats against enterprises. So as part of, like, you know, we have been doing this for the last 10 years or so, and we have developed some very interesting technologies, you know, stuff like intent analysis. So we are looking at content and not only doing keyword searches on it, but we are looking at, you know, where did the content come from? Who wrote it? Where was it found? So we are using a lot of factors to actually evaluate what is the intent of the author. And then more recently, we also got into the space of, you know, detecting malware on the web. Now, we have core competency in crawling the web and figuring out what's happening out there. So we said, hey, you know, why not take this ability and take it to the next level where we can find out where are the bad places where, you know, malware is being distributed, exploits are being used to deliver malware on your desktop. So there are tons of issues that we look at, and we have developed some very serious technologies to identify threats that are not yet identified by AV engines or more traditional technologies. So, you know, it sort of came together. You know, I call this synthesis. We took various technologies that we have developed over the last decade or so, and we put together an appliance, which essentially is an email security device that looks at all the emails that you are getting as an individual. And we essentially are evaluating those emails to figure out if this is a social engineering attack designed to steal information from you, or if it's an attack to deliver a malware on your desktop. And to make it even better, what we also do is we do a red team exercise on your organization and figure out what is your cyber footprint, what information can be used against you. And this information, you know, the cyber footprint, we use in real time to make a correlation with the incoming messages and figure out, hey, you know, is this already known information and is being used against me? So the point is, before the end user or the recipient gets an email, the device actually evaluates all the links which are embedded in there to ensure no malicious payload can be delivered, and also the content to ensure that, you know, by unwittingly you don't give up information to an adversary that you should not be giving out. And all this happens in real time with minimal latency introduced. So we believe this is a device which is going to protect us from such spear phishing attacks and is adding a whole new layer of security which is not existent in the traditional technologies today.
So, Terry, for my typical listener, maybe someone working for an agency worried about spear phishing attacks, they should really have some kind of a policy, and they have to reinforce the policy with just human education. It's almost like training 101, isn't it?
Absolutely. Again, regarding with what Manoj talked about with our social engineering protection appliance, it's not only to have an appliance such as that to layer your security, but it's actually to educate people to be suspicious, to look for a misspelling in an email address, to hover your mouse over that link that comes into your email to see, is that actually going to a legitimate site or is it sending me somewhere else? If a document comes in, is it actually an innocent document or is it something like an .exe file? So there are some things that can be, that the humans can be educated on so that you're lessening the particular threat. It kind of takes me back to, you know, every child, every parent educates their kids about don't take candy from strangers. Don't go near the creepy man in the van. in the same token, we have to educate people what a suspicious email looks like, just like a suspicious person.
And it's not just the big dogs. It's everyone in the organization, because the weakest link can provide the opening.
Absolutely. And this includes everything from, again, the person who holds the least status in an organization. Perhaps it's even an executive assistant who one would target, as opposed to the director or the executive within that agency or organization. So it really can be anyone, because once that malicious code or virus, worm, what have you, gets into the network, it can proliferate and actually get to the information the attacker was targeting in the first place.
Keep thinking of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Here we're in the midsummer and they talk about a chink, a little hole in the armor, a chink in the wall in the play. And that's all they need is just maybe a part-time receptionist or a contractor. And Manoj, there's a challenge for many of my listeners now. They may have a secure agency and they're bringing in federal contractors. What's the policy for them? Well, if employees can't do this, what's the policy for a federal contractor? And they may be some software developer who works at nights and weekends who opens the gates of the moat, huh?
That's exactly right. So yes, I mean, there is a policy that people are, you know, required to follow. But, you know, from my sort of vantage point, you know, policies are important. We should have in place. Education is important. We should educate our employees. But at the end of the day, we still have to enforce those policies. And enforcement is, you know, if you cannot detect what's going on, you're not able to actually enforce them. And that's where sort of technology comes into place, where, like, you know, either knowingly or unknowingly, something is happening and the technology is in place to detect it. In fact, like, if you look at, you know, what has been happening over the last 6 months to 12 months period, I mean, a lot of high profile attacks have happened. Google was the first one to go public with a very high profile attack, which was codenamed Operation Aurora. There were over 20 organizations from the private sector and about 20 plus organizations from the federal sector who actually were targeted. And, you know, most of these things came through spear phishing. More recently, RSA was targeted and, you know, their tokens database was compromised. There was another operation that happened, I think, earlier this year or late last year, which was codenamed Operation Night Dragon, where, like, you know, energy and petroleum companies were targeted. And what the adversaries were looking for, not just national secrets over there, they were looking for trade secrets, intellectual property. So this thing is all over the place. And, you know, spear phishing, social media information, all this is sort of coming together. And, you know, policies, education, and technology, everything has to play together if we have to fight back effectively against this threat.
Terry, so this the RSA adventure was a good example of spear phishing.
Absolutely. Again, it took perhaps one email, perhaps a series of emails targeted at certain individual or individuals within that organization. If I'm an attacker, unlike the common spammer who sends out, you know, a million emails, hopefully, you know, a handful of people are going to click on them. If I want you or your organization, I can have all the time in the world to keep targeting over and over and over again, and actually engage in my own red team exercise, where I go out on the internet looking at social media sites like LinkedIn, like your Facebook account, doing some generalized searches to find out maybe where you went to school or what conferences you've been at or what titles you hold. And I can over and over and over again craft emails, because the probability is I will find you in that day you're fatigued, tired, multitasking, curious, hit an emotional chord. I will try over and over again, because that target is that important to me.
So traditionally, you would hire a penetration testing company to go after your firewall, or perhaps go after your physical security of a building and try to break into a building. So now what's happening in the last few years is you have to take that to the next step to harden your defenses against social attacks.
Absolutely.
Incredible. Changing real fast. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, talk more about social engineering attacks, what you can do to prevent it, and how to learn more about this fast-changing topic. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have two security experts, Dr. Terry Gouditis, Cyber Intelligence Director, and her colleague Manoj Srivastava, who's the CTO at a company called Cyvalence.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. the Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort AP Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
Here's Paul Benda, Director of Homeland Security, Advanced Research Project Agency, DHS, S&T, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Riverbed Technology.
Well, I think the future really is going to be that technology is going to have to converge with efficiencies. That, you know, we're going to have to build these new capabilities on the backs of creating better cost models for us.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How would you like to increase the productivity of your mobile and teleworkers? Now you can through Riverbed. Their WAN optimization solutions empower mobile workers with high-performance access to email, files, and applications and keep them collaborating in real time. Challenges and delays in working remotely suddenly disappear, and you're complying with telework and COOP mandates. Free your mobile workers to work anywhere with Riverbed. Learn more at riverbed.com. That's R-I-V-E-R-B-E-D.com. Riverbed. Think fast.
IBM's supercomputer Watson may make us feel inadequate on quiz shows, but our brains actually outperform even the most powerful computers in many respects. The human brain packs incredibly nimble learning and processing power into a relatively small space using tiny amounts of energy. Dwiga Kazum of Stanford University says today's digital computers will never really compare for a wide variety of tasks.
If we do brain simulation in real time using powerful supercomputers, it will basically require a dedicated nuclear power plant.
Kazum is part of a team engineering devices that mimic the versatile signaling strengths, learning ability, and size of the connections between nerve cells in the brain.
We try to extend the capabilities of information technology beyond digital logic.
The devices may also give us a better understanding of our brains. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Quest Government Services is becoming CenturyLink. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and financial strength, we are linking IT leaders to a better future. Your link to the future begins here. One company, stronger connected. See the benefits of partnering with us at quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have two security experts. We have Dr. Terry Gouditis, Cyber Intelligence Director, and her colleague, Manoj Srivastava, who's the CTO at Cyvalence, C-Y-V-I-E-L-L-A-N-C-E. For more information, this is the part of the show where we kind of lighten it up and don't talk about spear phishing and attacks and RSA. We talk about the guests and find out if they're really card-carrying nerds or not. So I have a simple test here for both of you. And these are just fun, silly questions and find a little bit more about the audience, maybe nail down who the real nerd is in the room. Terry, you're your first computer.
1986, one of the very first IBMs, no hard drive, booted by floppy.
Manoj, how about you?
Well, my first exposure was 82, an IBM machine, but a much bigger one. Took punch cards for programming. And I had to take off my shoe to get in that big room.
That's a funny one. Terry, you're your first cell phone.
I would say 1990.
Ooh, early. Those are the big luggable ones. You're putting some muscles on your arms.
Absolutely.
Manoj.
98, I think.
Well, you got beat on that one.
Yeah.
Terry, your operating system on your computer at home?
Actually, I have two. I have a Linux box, and I also have your basic Microsoft.
Manoj?
All Mac.
All Mac. Okay. I think that's interesting. Connection at home, any kind of fancy connection or standard DSL?
Fios.
Standard.
Fios.
Okay. Type of mobile phone, Terry?
I have a Droid.
An iPhone. Okay. And number of apps on your Droid, Terry?
Oh, I'm going to guess probably about 30.
And number?
I have stopped keeping the count now.
Oh, that's a sure sign of being a nerd.
I think he beat me on that one.
Yeah. Tablet device, Terry?
I have an iPad.
iPad. Okay. And this is the hot topic. I'm going to ask about social networking sites for both of you. So, Terry, any of them at all?
In true name, I have zero.
All right. That's a discreet answer. You're going to give us a discreet answer, Mr. Security Expert?
Well, I have presence in all three.
Oh, there's another evasive answer. I have presence in all three. I may or may not.
Well.
And the final one, Terry, is last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
It was actually paper.
You lost points on that one, but my notes now?
Well, it's a combination of both. So I'm reading stuff on my iPad, and then I have, hard books.
I had a guest in here who got rid of all the books in his house. He's got all electronic. Get rid of all the CDs, all going to be music and electronics. So it's kind of a fascinating take on the whole technology subject. That's kind of fun and interesting. I follow a lot of people on Twitter feeds, all kinds of different folks. And what I'm noticing is that some security professionals are now making announcements on Twitter rather than coming on my show or, I guess, publishing it in the newspaper. And I guess with the dynamic nature of security, that's how people do it. I'm referring to a guy named Matt Cutts, two T's in both the Matt and the Cutts there. And he works with the spam folks at Google. And he talks about updates there. Yeah, kind of interesting how dynamic and fast it changes, huh, Terry?
Absolutely. Because of our fast-paced world right now, people want that information right now, not waiting to hear the update in a newspaper or even on a radio show like this. They want it right now, and they want to know as soon as something happens. I think the interesting dichotomy with that is it's fantastic to get that kind of real-time information flowing in. I warn people to make sure that they're actually following legitimate people. It doesn't take long for people to get a big following and actually masquerade as being some type of expert, or for someone to actually take your name with maybe a different spelling, also get a Twitter account or a Facebook account, and masquerade as you being the true security expert. So I caution everyone, just make sure you're reading the right people, and they are who you think they are, but getting it in that near real time is absolutely fantastic.
So, Manoj, if you're a high-level federal IT professional listening to the show, maybe one of the big dogs, the CIO Council, you may want to put your head in the sand and say, nope, I'm not going to have anything to do with LinkedIn, not going to have anything with Facebook, and I'm clean as a whistle. There may be someone like me who sits at home and comes up with the fake big dog account. I mean, on the internet, no one even knows if you're a dog anymore. Maybe there are some dogs out there who have LinkedIn profiles. So that's actually a concern that some of my listeners should have about fake profiles.
Oh, you're exactly right. I mean, you don't have an option not to have your own profile on these social networks today. You got to have them, because if you don't, somebody else will create it for you.
That's the case.
And you're not going to like that.
So if you say, I'm not going to have anything to do with it, well, just by the nature of being in the society today, you're involved.
Exactly. Things are evolving, talking about background checks, talking about who you are, who you have been. If you don't have a presence in cyberspace, there's something wrong. Right. So to have that, that credibility and that presence is essential to have to be who you are.
Now, Terry, there are best practices associated with having a LinkedIn profile. For example, you may work for a federal agency and be very proud of your security status and put it on your LinkedIn profile. Probably not a real wise bit of advice, huh?
No, I think from two different perspectives, the policies that a lot of the federal organizations should have is to use the same type of discretion that the employees would in any social situation or any following their security policies if they're holding a clearance or what have you. Because if you put it out there on LinkedIn and Facebook, basically you become the big target for the Chinese spy. And then if you have other associated social media sites such as Foursquare, You have a LinkedIn, you have a Facebook page. Very, very easy to put together what I call virtual surveillance. Through Foursquare, I know where you're going. I know where you're checking in. Through Facebook, I know who your social network is and your friends are. Through LinkedIn, I know what position you hold. And from sitting really anywhere in the world, I have an enormous amount of information about you, and you become a target.
So I can be sitting in rural Brazil, and if Manoj is not very smart, if he puts his social profile up there, he's at XYZ bar every Friday night, he's got a security clearance, I can be in the jungle near Manaus, and I can track this guy pretty carefully just by using the basic tools out there because he's naive.
Right. And that is exactly right. And I think the caution over here is to understand that, you know, social networks or cyberspace, this is a public place, right? So the same precautions, you know, that you take in daily life and when you are dealing with the public, with folks you don't know, you got to take the same precautions. The default over here is that whatever you are saying, whatever you are doing, whatever you are disclosing is public information. And if there is some information that you would not disclose in public, don't do it on social networks. Be very careful what your configurations and your settings and your privacy settings are and ensure that they are working the way they are intended to, supposed to work.
When I first started sending email years and years ago, my first thought was, if I wouldn't want to put it above the fold in the Washington Post Sunday edition, don't put it in email. I mean, and I was tempted to what they call flame people many times, but I figured, no, what I want my next door neighbor to read this, no. And I think there's got to be some kind of an informal policy or maybe a written policy for listeners about what to put on Facebook or who is speaking for your agency. Are you allowed to say that, Manoj? Oh, really? You're allowed to say that about your company or agency. It's got to be a policy because there isn't. Who knows what's going to happen? What kind of policies do you think for agencies they should start off with, Terry?
I think first to make two very basic type of policies. One, like Manoj said, you have to be out there. So there should be an authorized group of users in every organization who have the authority and the autonomy to speak for that organization. Maybe it's your PR department, your communications department, who's really the public face of your government agency. And then I think there's a separate policy for the non-authorized users who are not speaking on behalf of the organization for, again, public relations reasons or otherwise. And as John had indicated, you know, depending on how liberal or conservative one wants to be with their policy, should you even disclose the agency you're working for? If you have a clearance, should you disclose the organization you're working for? And so on and so on. And there may be different degrees of openness you may or may not allow your employees.
Because if you look at the different social websites, like Google Plus just popped up, you may be able to scrape information, maybe not from one site, but two or three sites, and combine that with mobile location device. All of a sudden, you have the pieces of a puzzle where you can send a very convincing, as your white paper says, an email that's sufficiently curious to take action. And those are the magic words. I mean, crafting an email that is sufficiently curious to say, oh, put this piece in, met you last night at the bowling league, you scored 298, that was a great job, oh, by the way, click on this funny link of a bowling guy just like you. Bang, Terry would click on it and get hooked.
Absolutely. And I think even for those individuals who say, well, I don't tweet, I don't have a Facebook page, I'm maybe old school or I'm not comfortable with that. The truth of the matter is you may not be Facebooking or posting, but your neighbors might be. And time after time again, our company finds where we find out a neighbor is posting on Facebook, oh, the Gilroy family is on vacation this
oh,
week.
Oh, great. Thank you, Terry.
And then again, all it takes is someone to scrape up additional information about John Gilroy and his family. There are people find sites where I can find his home address. There are county record information, a plethora of information that's now very public.
And Manoj may not have a malicious intent.
That's right.
My next door neighbor, John Gilroy, what a great guy. We had a picnic over there last week and a lot of fun. Oh, he's at the beach this week. And he may not even, and there's no intent there, but someone from a distance could be monitoring me and go, oh boy, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
It's a kind of a scary situation. We've talked about all kinds of different topics here, layered security and security in social media, and been a great show. We're going to have to end this now and maybe continue it down the road and find out more about Google Plus in a year and see how big it is, and or maybe it'll fizzle out. Who knows? You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk here with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We had two guests in the studio today. We had Dr. Terry Gouditis, who is the cyber intelligence director, and her colleague, Manoj Srivastava, who's the CTO at a company called Cyvalence.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Where's the best place to work in the federal government? Federal News Radio and Washingtonian Magazine want to know. Take our brief survey at federalnewsradio.com, search term work survey.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home
of media.
This paid
commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.